Hello and a very warm welcome to the Red Velvet Revelry podcast. This is podcast number 7 and I'm Marie-Louise. In this season, I have been speaking to different women who are all doing interesting and important work in the field of women's sexuality. Today, I am delighted to introduce you, if you haven't already come across her, to Penny Pepper. Penny is a writer, she's an activist, she's a punk. She's a person who uses a wheelchair full time. And in her stories, her sexual stories, some of her characters are disabled. It's a voice you don't often hear, and it's stories that are not easy to get published. So please join me as I have a very interesting chat to Penny Pepper. Red Velvet Revelry, Red Velvet Revelry. Join us and you will see. It's time for Red Velvet Revelry. Stories you never knew. Facts that are coming through. We'll bring them all to you. Sisters, that's what we do. Red Hello and welcome to Red Velvet Revelry, the podcast. Today I have a special guest with me by the name of Penny Pepper. Penny is a writer and a disabled activist, or an activist for disabled people. She has not only been through the menopause and come out the other side, but she is a writer who writes very amusingly, interestingly, and in a lively way about her life experience. I came across her in the book Still Hot. You may remember it's a book which contains women's stories, different kinds of stories about the menopause. And I really wanted to meet her and to hear more about her work and her life. And I think she has some important things to say around women and sexuality. Welcome, Penny Pepper.
Thank you for asking me, Marie-Louise. I'm very delighted and chuffed to be here with you.
Well, it's lovely because one of the things that I'm learning in my journey is that when you come across somebody who has an interesting story and you want other people to hear it, you have to be a little bit bold and just speak to them and take, you know, be a bit vulnerable to just say, would you be willing to come and speak or to share your stories? I'm trying to share my stories and invite other women to share a kind of diverse range of experiences around sexuality, the stories that we often don't get to hear. What I would really love, Penny, is for you to tell our listeners something about who you are and what you do.
So for as long as I can remember, sounds very precious, but it's true, I've been a writer. I've been a writer before I was allowed to be a writer, if you like, from childhood and working class background, a disabled child, actually. I was not born with my impairment, my medical condition, but I became a wheelchair user by the age of 12, 14. And I already knew I wanted to be a writer then. And I realised fairly quickly that how I saw the world and how my peers saw the world and those around me at that time was not reflected anywhere in any shape or form. And what we did have was the likes of Clara in Heidi, who, and I have a poem called Bookworm, where I basically say, you know, up the hill with Heidi, if Clara breathes the air, you know, and is very positive, she'll be cured. So I had that imposed upon me that I couldn't really have an identity without being cured. But because I was also a punk, so I started to venture out into the world with my work through punk fanzines. And it was also a time where, although I was pretty much living in the bedroom, stuck at home with mum, not able to go anywhere, due to just so many barriers in, you know, in the in the world. I felt that, that punk absolutely moulds me to this day, because it was the time when women became much more aware of their own fates and destinies. You realised that, and it goes on to this day, like, to be a woman was not this set thing. And I really liked that. I really responded. There was a little phase where I felt, oh, does that mean you have to wear a sort of uniform and so on? But actually it helped me become a peacock. And that's always been important to me, to like how I dress. Doesn't always suit everybody. Or my mum used to despair. I went through the black phase before goths were even a thing. It was important, and it tied into so much of what I did. And from that, really, that just set me on my path, that the only thing I could ever wish to do was be a writer.
Wow.
It tied in a lot with activism, I suppose, because it was, I feel really privileged to have been born so that I was an original era punk. I've just turned 61. And all punks are all old like that now. It's quite funny. But we certainly had a very different view on identity and permission, if you like, than, say, my mum and her generation. So there was never an issue of you can't or you shouldn't for me. So the more people told me I couldn't be a writer or I couldn't have freedom, the more I fought for it. And I was lucky to be around with the development of the disability art scene, which was quite radical. Something I wrote about was in an anthology once, was about the birth of disability arts as a counterculture movement, which to some extent it still is today. Because it hasn't really become mainstream to any level. And I'm proud to be one of the grandmas of it. And I was given more opportunity to write at the same time as realising, trying to think the first, well, one of the first things I wrote professionally was a guide for young people, what we call by us and for us.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, it's not written by an expert, it's not written by a non-disabled person, it's written by us to give us support. And that was a sex guide called Our Bodies, Our Relationships. And that was about 96, something like that. I think I might have one copy. It was done through a voluntary organisation, but I was taken on as publications officer, and it was one of the first things I did, and I'm still incredibly proud of that. We did everything. I was also proud that, you know, by that time I was married. I must show off, though. I should describe it because this is a podcast, but I'm going to hold up my memoir.
Oh, let's see.
It's called First in the World Somewhere, and it's the true adventures of a scribbler, siren, saucepot and pioneer. So we're hoping it is still available out there. It's available as an e-book. The hardbacks are going quite fast. So if you're in hardback, get it soon. Published by Unbound. There's a lot of that in there, that how that all came about and how I got to be writing about sex and so on.
Well, we will put a link at the end of the podcast with where people can find more about you and where they can get hold of your writing, whether it's an ebook or physical things to read. Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned in the Still Hot book is this experience of the menopause and your experience of going through that. But what I was particularly hoping to ask you about was if you could tell us something about the experience of being a disabled person who is a sexual person and what that means for you and what some of the issues are that women who are not disabled might not even think about.
I think looking back, it's interesting for me now that I didn't really have a lot of self-love. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women fight and struggle with that anyway. And so I had no idea of all those games you go through with yourself when you're young, teenager, young adult, about am I attractive? Do I want to be attractive? What does attractive mean? I think that when you're disabled, you just have this great weight upon your shoulders of a perceived cliched idea of what that is. It's like a double whammy. Not only do you struggle with your self-love, but then it's reflected back at you that you can't ever be attractive, you can't ever be sexual. But I do know now, I can weep looking back at pictures of myself, that I was quite a little hottie. I was skinnier, like, you know, many of us were, and I was... I had multicoloured hair extensions. The first year or so they actually came into this country.
Wow.
I would wear a lot of leather dresses. I had lots of kitten heel shoes. But then the other extreme, I would be quite kind of in your face, where I would be totally covered up but still quite, you know, strong looking. Hand on my heart, it tells a lot of women something, I think. I never really, if I'm absolutely honest, struggled to find partners.
Mm.
But it's only now that I realise that. So I've been married twice, engaged about three times. And I sometimes think, so what is the difference? Why is there that kind of dichotomy almost, that we're fed those messages. Yeah. And I know I'm quite a lively, you know, ridiculously silly person. So in a positive way, I hope. And I hope I'm a decent, rounded human being. And I've looked at all those debates about did I play the game sometime? I've always been into makeup and whatever. But then... I was a veneer going into the New Romantics when men were first wearing makeup in my generation, and I loved it. You know, so it's like, I don't know, I think it's partly an attitude. I was incredibly shy and went into incredible shock if anyone ever asked me out. I think that the most obvious barriers you face are practical.
Right.
First of all, there's... literal barriers. It's one of the main causes of disability is environmental barriers.
Of course.
And because those barriers don't need to be there. So when I was young, there was nowhere to go that I could get in as a wheelchair user. And I didn't even use it all the time then, but I couldn't do flights of steps. So if you were trying to go on a date, and when I did the sex guide, that was one of the things that come through on our research, that please, I'd like to just go on a nice date before we get to sexual action. And I think that is still really important. I was lucky coming from that background, though. I went on a long journey of, if you like, sexual liberation and learning. I realised that I was my own person, slowly but surely. I didn't have to be pinned down by any cliche. And to some extent, that's taught me a lot. I mean, I can go into, I'm not shy about it. You do, obviously, you have to think, you have to be more adventurous, weirdly, and more creative when you get down to the nitty gritty. And that will be about, but that's still about communication. That's still about being comfortable to say, no, I can't do that because something will drop off or twist or hurt. Well, everyone should be able to say that.
Of course.
And while at 20, you know, I was kind of having sex on Bournemouth Beach. with a very physically strong husband, or every accessible loo from here to you know, the back of Edinburgh, maybe, where I have been, yeah. It's so the detail of how people are always interested in the how. Yeah. They get kind of, I don't know, like sometimes they're freaked and sometimes they're just nosy or curious. But to me, it reveals how lacking in imagination they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Also the push that sex is not only about missionary position penetration. Mm-hmm. It is not. And if it is, I feel sorry for you.
And do you think that punk, the kind of, and the philosophy of punk helped you with that as well?
Yeah, I do, very much so. But of course I remember a lot of the women who, you just can't imagine them not being in control. Everyone from Susie Sue to bands like The Slits, X-Ray Specs, Polystyrene, who... I have to get a little mention in because I particularly love her because she sang that wonderful song that was "Oh Bondage Up Yours." she actually lived, because I'm in Hastings, and she lived about two roads away. They just put up a blue plaque because she very sadly passed early from cancer, and she's just got a blue plaque put up, so it's lovely. Oh. But just like even how those women looked. I will say, because I did at that time, I developed a band. I had a band. I sold an album. All the guys I was involved with within that framework, they were just empty of prejudice. It's really weird to think of it. They would all be like, it was funny. It was that black, you know, the black overcoat brigade of Joy Division, whatever, where you're like, you're talking about being an existentialist man and all this stuff. So that was more important. A lot of that in my memoir, by the way. Where
wow.
Me and my friend, we moved to London together. Again, I won't divert into that, but we had this idea we wanted an orgy. We didn't really know what an orgy was. Well, we did on paper, but in reality, we were like, well, how'd you start one then? You know, I should write a short story based on that because it was funny. You know, it was like...
Yeah, that sounds like a great story, Penny. I'd love to hear that.
Who goes first and what do you do first? You go, come on, let's have an orgy, ho-ho. You know, it was hilarious. But none of the young men I worked with in those early years were anything other than respectful.
Right.
And they were all like male feminists because it was that era. I'm not saying they were perfect, but never were they, they never discriminated against me because I was disabled. And I wrote songs. I did the singing. They never discriminated against me as a disabled woman. It just didn't even exist. And that was so refreshing.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I'm touting my memoir, but there's a particular scene I'm proud of where I met a record company exec. But everyone's going to have to buy it to find out. It wasn't nice.
I was going to ask you, Penny, what do you think it's like for young women who are disabled at the moment? Do you think that's the same? Do you think the young men that they're meeting are without prejudice, or do you think their communication is good? Do you have a sense of what it's like at the moment?
I do think I think in some ways it's got better, and the great liberator has been the internet, right. Although it's also, you know, great evil. It is a great liberator because I still feel for people who aren't completely shallow, developing a connection through chat, however that's accessible to you, made accessible, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a little bit ahead of the game because using the internet, I was on very early. Particularly for my sort of age group, I wasn't the initial target age group, but I really found that a liberation, and I'm on all social media platforms.
Right.
And there is a difference. You know, I follow a few American disabled women who have 100,000 followers, and they are fighting because the downside of internet, of course, is the trolling.
Oh yeah,
I've been trolled, but weirdly, nothing to do with sex. I've got quite tough skin, you know, working class punk. Yeah,
yeah.
You know. Fuck off, basically. but I can see that it allows people to communicate in a whole new way,
right?
Without having physical access to meet up. I hope it doesn't ever replace that. I mean, what with COVID as well, that's been another layer, hasn't it? So. And we've now got the issue where some people don't ever want to be on Zoom again, whereas a lot of disabled people realise we could do this, like they call it the hybrid approach.
Mm.
It takes down barriers.
Yeah.
Now, disability is a created barrier. Disability is when you have too many barriers that can be removed. That is the core. That's what activists define disability as. And again, if anyone reads my stuff, my column, there's lots more information. That's an idea that's been around 45 years.
Wow.
Hello. And it still slowly seeps through. If you're changing the world, you're changing access. You're not changing it for me. Mm-hmm. You're changing it for all. For all those members in a society that need it, because I do a lot of local work around that with friends and colleagues, and it's always about we can maybe get a ramp in for that evening you're there. No, you've got to have access whether I'm there or not.
Yeah,
I may never decide to come to your venue, but that is irrelevant. Anyway, I won't go on about that, but well, I say there's a lot of sexy young disabled women. They show who their boyfriends are. There's some amazing women out there of all ages who really fight the fight as well, and they're feisty. And I do still think it's sad because sometimes those women seem stronger than non-disabled women, young women particularly, who are trying to conform to this ideal.
Yeah.
Whether it's having no body hair, shaving your eyebrows off or painting them on or whatever. And part of me weeps for them because I want to go, in the end, it doesn't matter. I mean, we all know that, don't we? We all know that. When we're young, we might go through some of that, and that's the growing up process. But that extreme on the internet, I think, is horrific.
Yeah. And I think one of the gifts that some women experience as they age is becoming more and more comfortable with themselves and their own sexuality, whatever that's like, you know, and they become more aware that there isn't just one sort of cardboard cutout that we're all supposed to fit in. But it's hard to know that at the beginning, I think.
I also think as well that, again, with the internet, there's a whole subculture going on that you don't necessarily know about. I mean, a lot of these women I follow, and they're not all in the 100,000, or I think one's got 1 million. If you're not in that zone, you wouldn't know anything about how big an influencer she is. Like, one of my favourite influencers is someone called Lulu. Do you know Lulu? I think you should look her up.
Yeah, I will. Lulu.
Lulu in Lululand. She's big on Instagram and TikTok, but she's, I think she's just turned 50 because she makes me laugh, really. But she just goes around dressing up in all these mad vintage clothes. I think she's made her name for that, and someone recommended her to me. She does a lot of working out and blah blah blah, because I really like her, but I do sometimes think, how she can cope when she can't do circuit training, whatever it is. She'll do mad things like wear these wonderful vintage negligees with nothing underneath and go snowboarding. She calls herself, she's got this little tagline, which is something like, don't give a fuck, or and a big ray of sunshine. She's British and you can buy a T-shirt. But I absolutely love her because you can't help but she'll be on Instagram posing with vibrators. Wow. Very carefully.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they're not really obvious. They look really innocent. And tasteful vibrators. There's a
Well, that's great to know because, I mean, one of the reasons for doing Red Velvet Revelry is to try and just open up the world of sexuality and women's different experiences, because we only know what we know in the circles that we move in unless we have some other reason to kind of interact with people who are outside our group. And I would really, you know, I would really love it for more women to just have that understanding of the breadth. And I wonder if you have, I don't know if you have a wee story, Penny, about your own experience that would just illustrate a kind of joyful aspect of sexuality from your own experience. Because, you know, everybody's got miserable stories about sex and some people have got really lovely stories about sex and not everybody feels comfortable sharing them. So if you had something, that would be great.
I do have, but I'm just thinking, God, what one? What do I do? A wonderful experience.
Or something where things changed for you when you felt more comfortable in your sexuality, or even just a fun incident.
Yes. Well, yes, I will do one, which is when I had a little flurry when I divorced my first husband, was my late 30s. And I have to say, I think that was a wonderful time of coming into my own sort of identity and learning to love my body. And I actually did a little bit of TV work about, because I'd written the sex guide and I'd written a few other things for other people about sexuality as well. And so I did that thing, though, that I felt I was catching up for lost time. And I've done it because I've been married twice and divorced twice. And I'm the one who broke up. Because, of course, there's a cliche. If you say you've been divorced, they think, oh, God, they must be, oh, it must have been such a burden for him. And it's like, excuse me. Having husbands who can't bloody get their way out of find their way out of a paper bag and have no idea how to, well, anyway, won't go on about that. But so I did this literally the single life, which some of that is I put into The Desires Reborn, and then sort of fictionalized it and extended it. I think one of the things I really liked doing, and it was an experiment, and I did have a close friend, still got this close friend, who had done it before me, which was literally shock horror, is just get into casual sex. And so I did. And it was through groups who, you know, existing groups that I knew, whether it was through arty stuff or I was really quite into sort of new agey healing and whatever. So the people that I was mingling with anyway were quite alternative. So that was quite interesting. But it was also interesting that I had more offers than I could cope with. And I remember the fun of, oh, well, that was it. That was the particular one I was going to tell you. The guy who liked velvet underwear, who was also a copper. So he bought me some velvet underwear. And, yeah, he was quite hot and he did have handcuffs. Wow. But also he was quite strong, so he could, like, fling me about without hurting me. And I remember once we were, like, on the job, and my mum rang up. So, and the, for some reason, the answer phone was so loud. We did both have a good laugh. And it almost, like, melted the ice, and as it were, but just it was so funny. Oh. And my mum's going, "What are you doing now?" Yeah, it was proper mother. Might approve of that. And that, but it just made it more fun. It was good sex. There was another one I'll tell you quickly, which was someone I'd sort of met, and we were thinking, oh, you know, what should we do? Bit. He was a bit into fetish clothes, so I was like exploring that and what whether to wear a corset. And I remember that I said, okay, like, what should we do? And he said, oh, let's start with oral. God, you know. And I got the giggles. It was really good. I got the giggles. So anyway, I was giving him this blowjob, and then I felt like I couldn't stop laughing. And then my cat came in, which often happens. My cat was looking at me a minute ago. My black cat came in, and she gave me a look because she walked by, and that made me worse. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to bite him. I'm going to bite his dick off. So I thought, no, I've got to get this over with. So I'm like, you know, trying to make it happen. And then when I went in, afterwards I said, oh, can't remember what his name was. He had a funny name, Mr. Dark, whatever. Oh, I just got to dash to the bedroom and I'll be back. And when I was in the bedroom, I just went into hysterics. And my cat followed me in, and I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I just thought, what am I doing? This guy's just, it's not working for me. And I thought, but, you know, he could return the favour, couldn't he? At least. And it was just this moment of looking at my cat in the bedroom in hysterics. And I know sometimes that story could have, that experience could be made into a story that was quite grim, like, why did I do it? Well, because I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
He wasn't forcing me to do it. I encouraged him. I wanted to. And actually that ended, we didn't see each other again. He wasn't very good at oral. You know, I know a lot of women moan about that, but it's true. It was like he had a little book, page one. All that. So, yeah, grist to the mill, Mary Louise, grist to the mill.
There's so much sex education still required, isn't there?
Oh, I know. But of course, the bottom line for me, I'm a full-time wheelchair user. I've been with my partner that I'm with now for 11 years. We don't live together, and I never want to live together. And I feel that part of me in looking at alternative methods of relationship is still important to me. And also, even as we get older, what you can and can't do anyway.
Yeah.
I also feel that we should always challenge the decisions we make about relationships. But you see, although I'm getting older, it's almost like I've done all the hard bits already. So,
yeah. Well, Penny, it sounds like however you get older, you're going to do it your way, you know, and that is, you know, that is a very sexually attractive feature of a human being, that they have a life energy and a sense of who they are and everything. And that's just so important. And indeed. I think the next bit in terms of aging, you know, that's going to be an issue for all of society, is how do you still see people as individuals with their own inner lives and their physical desires and all of that, regardless of who they are, what they look like, what age they are, whether they're disabled or not. It's part of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I must just tell you a quick little addendum to that, that my mum, I take after my mum. My mum's a life wire, and she's had a lot of sadness in her life. But when she was in her 60s, she'd been a widow for quite a while, and she got together with an Australian who was in his 30s. And she went to Australia for 3 months, and they were together for about 4 years. And I think she absolutely loved it. Uh-huh. And the age gap did, because they didn't look odd. My mum's very young looking. She's not really interested. She's not down the spa all the time or putting Botox in her face. Nothing like that. But she's just. He's lively and warm. And this guy, they just really got on. He had a little bit of a more mature manner about him, but he was very good to my mum. And I'm glad he had that happiness. So, and she's still here. She's about to be 84, I think, in November. So I'm glad she had that. It's a great,
memory.
Yeah, great memory.
Great. And a role model, let's face it.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I'm quite contented at the moment, and I do love going away. Me and my partner went away last week. We went away for a sort of date night, a passion night, and it was great because it's like you're fresh and new, and there are a lot of barriers. We haven't really talked much about barriers that are unnecessary, which... Even if we wanted to live together, it would be hard. We're both wheelchair users. Yeah. And the system, if you like, doesn't easily support that. One reason my second marriage failed, I believe, to this day, and I'm still friends with that husband, is you're just not allowed your own identity within things like social care or housing or whatever. And... So you're always joined at the hip.
Yeah.
And if one of you wants to do something separate, you might be putting the other person at risk. So you're not allowed to be separate entities, and that's one reason I would never do that again anyway.
Right.
But they also do things like they assume that you will kind of protect each other. No matter like how disabled you or your partner may be, so it just doesn't make sense. It's just it's just an imposition that you don't have as many rights as non-disabled people. Not a surprise, but you know.
And Penny, is there anything that for women who are not disabled that are listening to this that are just thinking, oh, I hadn't thought about that? Is there anything that you think it would be useful just to kind of alert people like me too, and, you know, because of the assumptions that we're making in everyday life?
I think it's bigger than the disability issue. Is just know that we all have the capacity to be sexual and to have sexual expression, and it isn't one thing or the other. And consensual sexual expression, I believe, is a fundamental right. And however that manifests, and it doesn't have to manifest with very vanilla, straight, missionary sex, you know, it doesn't. I would say that. Always stay open. Face your prejudice as well. Years ago I did something for Radio 4. The woman said something like, oh, I'm a bit outside my comfort zone with disability and sex. I mean, how do you respond to that? Would she have said that about anything else? You know, like if you think of it,
yeah,
like in any other context? I don't think so. I hope not, but you can think of some horrific ones. So why was that okay to say that to my face? So, you know, if you feel uncomfortable about it, at least challenge why you do.
Yeah.
It's nearly always because you have an insecurity or a hang-up, and that is nothing to do with me or any disabled person.
Yeah.
So I want to end on something positive at that point. Well, that just, it's such a tired, cliche to learn about self-love, but it is so important. You know, buy a crate of vibrators. There's another story, really, because I'm still after the holy grail of the perfectly accessible one, because it isn't there yet, I can tell you. Because I've been approached to guide on stuff like that. Mm. And I say, well, I'm a writer first and foremost, so go and do that properly elsewhere. You know, I've written for things like the Love Honey blog and about my first vibrator. Again, that's in the memoir. If you can't reach, I haven't had to touch my own genitals for like 50 years. But so what do you do? You hope someone else will, but you might want to have some nice self-play, and you just end up going through these circles about how to make it happen. And I know that a lot of women, as they get older, will find that harder.
Yep.
Their hands will get painful. They'll get stiffness in fingers, all those things. And that's just an average aging process.
Yeah.
And yet to have an orgasm or to have that pleasure is so good for you.
Oh.
So, you know. Yeah, if anyone's listening about that, I've had so many people say, well, this is accessible. And it isn't.
Suck it and see.
Oh God, yeah. Or maybe not. Go back to my story.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, Penny, thank you so much. Thank you so much for chatting to me and for your stories. And I'm sure that people will be looking up. So I'll put the details of the different books that you have and where all the different social platforms where you can be found, because your stories are very good and your writing is lovely. And I would, it would be great if more people can just be able to access that. And these conversations continue.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mary Louise. And yes, I just not just for me having a big ego trip, but if people can buy my work, that is so appreciated, because we still don't have equality. Disabled people's stories are still not taken on or picked up, or, you know, I still have trouble selling my novel. Come on, anyone out there listening? It's with 100 publishers, but they're still so nervous. And yet I know, and you probably know, Mary Louise, that people want good stories.
Yep.
I've won awards for stories. I've won awards. And it's like, so there's that gap. Give us stories. I'm here. I'm waiting.
And for so many people, we need stories that reflect how we are and who we are. And when we don't see that in our society or in our literature or on the telly, it affects your ability to kind of realise that your story is valid.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, black women are maybe slightly ahead of disabled women. If you're a black disabled woman, well, forget it. You know, according to how you're exposed, you don't exist. And you can add that, you can layer that, well, I can say that as a working class woman over 60 now, disabled woman over 60, I don't exist in any sexual capacity. It's just crazy. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Penny. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie-Louise. Bye.
Bye.
It was both great fun and rather illuminating to chat with Penny about her life and her adventures. I'm sure she's a woman who has more adventures to come. Next time on the Red Velvet Revelry podcast, I'll be speaking to Catherine Crawley of All Catherine. Catherine does some beautiful work with women. She brings her own life experience and her values and her knowledge to help women really be in love with themselves as female creatures, with their cycles, with their limitations and their gifts. Join me as I speak to Catherine next time on the Red Velvet Revelry podcast. And now that things are opening up, if you're in the Edinburgh area, there are some live events happening with Red Velvet Revelry. So please do visit our website, www.redvelvetrevelry.com, to find out about events and to sign up to our newsletter if you'd like to keep abreast of what's going on. Thank you for joining me, and I'll speak to you next time. Bye.